Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. It's Monday, December 30th, 2019. Today, I'm going to do my very best to answer your questions about so-called Second Amendment sanctuaries, in most prominently in Virginia, but elsewhere, wherever you happen to be or wherever you happen to have questions about them, I'm going to do my best to cover that. A lot of people left questions in advance, so I've got a few of them listed out, but I will also go through the live chat and check those out as well. But before that, I do want to share a few cautionary tales warning against having high expectations that resolutions passed by a bunch of local governments lead to anything beyond political talk and grandstanding, because we've been down this road before, and a lot of people aren't aware of how this always plays out. First of all, my name is Michael Bolden. I am your Southern Poverty Law Center, I guess we'll say endorsed in quotes, dangerous leader, hate watch leader of the so-called radical right, as they put it, or I've been called by Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, a dangerous neo-Confederate. Well, I broadcast live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time from here in my home office and studio in downtown Los Angeles for the 10th Amendment Center. We do live broadcasts by video through a number of channels, YouTube, Facebook, DLive, Twitch, and Periscope. We have archived versions at Brighteon.com, BitChute.com, BitTubers.com. Plus, we have audio-only podcast editions through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and elsewhere. If you've got a suggestion of where you'd like to see the show, what platform you'd like to see it on, feel free to send me an email, team@10thAmendmentCenter.com. Of course, all of our archives, all of the show notes, links that I reference in each episode, ways to follow and support us, our membership program. You can find all of that stuff over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/Path to Liberty. Again, 10thAmendmentCenter.com/Path to Liberty, all spelled out. And for those of you who watch on a regular basis, you might be wondering, wow, man, he doesn't sound too good. I've got a bit of a cold, just a quick heads up, a chest cold. It sounds much worse than it really is, but I'm going to do my best and we'll stick around. This might be a long episode, but we'll stick around here as long as I'm able to answer some interesting questions. But first of all, just hello to everyone out in the live chat. Justin Morrison, Dennis Marburger, Noah, I see your question as well. I appreciate you posting that. Funky Euphemism, Larry Clark, Christ Saves, Tyler B., Essential Freedom, Season of the Witch, Dan Warsaw, been a while. Good to see you, man. Fap Damage, Melody Scammon. Scammon? I'm not sure how you say that. I apologize if I get any of these wrong. Timothy Martin, good to see you as well. And Andrew Nappy, my good longtime buddy from down in Florida. This guy is awesome. Good to see you guys. Anyway, so, and Funky Euphemism says, it says you're on the right track. You know, I had written to, I don't know how many of you guys read LouRockwell.com, but I remember I wrote an article in response to the Rachel Maddow hit piece a few years ago. Her show did not just a minor trash talk. She spent an entire, I think, 14-minute episode talking about the work of the 10th Amendment Center being dangerous neo-Confederate nonsense because we were opposed to all gun control, Obamacare, all kinds of federal programs and regulations that we believe shouldn't exist. And we want to use nullification, state and local action to stop them. And so she spent this entire time. I emailed a response over to Lou Rockwell. It was kind of cool because he had said to me, he's like, you know, the pin might hurt, but this is a badge of honor. And that's basically what Funky is saying over in the live chat. I really appreciate you guys spending some time with me today, but let's get into this because this is probably going to be a lot of me talking and talking and talking. First of all, I like to start things out with a foundation. I think if you have the right foundation, you're going in the right direction. If you start out with a bad foundation, you're going in the wrong direction, or you're more likely to go in the wrong direction. And I like what Richard Henry Lee, there are many examples from the founders that I think fit in my foundation. John Adams said he would argue with every member and both political parties rather than prostitute his tongue or pen to either. Patrick Henry warned us in the Virginia Ratifying Convention that if you rely on your politicians, your government people, to be good men, he said, you will always have a subsequent loss of liberty. In other words, don't trust government. And here's Richard Henry Lee. I think this was a letter to his cousin around 1788 or so. He says, politics is, quote, the science of fraud. So I approach basically every positive thing that I might hear from government as a total cynic. Not because, just because most of the times when they promise something, they're either lying about it, it costs way more than they ever said it would do, they never really intended it to be that way, or it gets manipulated into something else. Not just because of my personal observations, but because as the head and founder of the 10th Amendment Center, I'm supposed to be sharing with you the views of the founders. And the founders certainly looked with a cynical eye on politicians. And here's this great example. Politics is the science of fraud. And he basically said politicians are the scientists that are really good at doing that fraud. So that's what I want to start out with here. And if I can pull up my notes, because there's a lot of stuff here. And so if we're starting out with don't trust politicians, don't trust politics, we shouldn't get too excited when we hear what might sound like positive statements from politicians, from governments at any level. Because you really have to dig in and you can find out that there's something other than something positive under the surface in most times. And in regards to Second Amendment sanctuaries, we've been down this road before. A lot of people, when they're hearing about these things passing in Virginia, I keep getting messages like this, like, hey, man, you're not on board. We've never heard anything like this before. We've never seen all these sheriffs and counties telling us they weren't going to participate, that they oppose restrictions on the right to keep and bear arms. But if it's new, you might be really excited. The fact of the matter is, in just recent years, we've gone through this before with dozens to hundreds of city and county level non-binding resolutions opposing violations of the Second Amendment, gun control. We've also heard it in response to NDAA indefinite detention. We've also had hundreds of cities and counties pass non-binding resolutions in response to the Patriot Act and NSA spying. And none of them actually yielded any fruit for liberty. So let's start out looking at some of these things. First of all, I want to start with the Patriot Act. Here's an article from 2004 in Wired. Cities say no to the Patriot Act. And they report here, a growing grassroots movement seeks to make the United States a Patriot Act-free zone, one city at a time. In the past 2 years, more than 300 cities in four states have passed resolutions calling on Congress to repeal or change parts of the USA Patriot Act. That's one part of it. So we had over 300 cities do this, calling for a repeal or change of the Patriot Act. But beyond that, they also declared their intent to not participate in mass warrantless surveillance, not help the federal government. The report goes on. The resolutions declare that their communities will uphold the constitutional rights of their residents should federal law enforcement agents come knocking on the door of local authorities for assistance in tracking residents. This means local authorities will insist on complying with federal orders only in ways that do not violate constitutional rights. And we know since that time, none of these local governments have actually done this. Or very, very few. It didn't stop the Patriot Act. In fact, it keeps getting renewed and expanded. On top of that, most of these local governments that pass these resolutions saying we're not going to participate also do data sharing. They collect information on behalf of the federal government through tools like cell site simulators, automated license plate readers, facial recognition, drones, and cameras. They're doing surveillance all over the place without a warrant, just based on probable cause, oath or affirmation, describing the purse, place, or thing that is going to be searched or seized. So they are not following the Fourth Amendment to help the federal government, and they're not even following their state constitutions either. So they're doing this on a regular basis, and I did an episode of this show last year talking about how license plate readers in just 200 cities around the country collected 2.5 billion scans tracking where people are driving for the mere crime or suspicions of a crime of driving a car. And less than a percent of them were ever even potentially involved in criminal activity. And then they share it all. They share it with the federal government. They share it through information sharing environment and fusion centers with everybody. So we know that this type of thing was a lot of talk. They said, we're not going to participate in this. But yet, and this is just one example, they certainly did. And the report goes on. It goes a little further. It says the municipal resolutions crafted individually by each community vary in language. They affirm for the most part that city employees aiding federal authorities in national security investigations will not violate the rights of people under investigation, such as monitoring political and religious gatherings where people are engaging in activities protected by the First Amendment. That's very narrow, but now they don't supposedly, they were only going to use this for national security. They've expanded it to basically everyone. So one example, 300 plus cities and counties passed resolutions opposing mass warrantless surveillance, and they did nothing to follow up to stop that. And then going on, we also had a bunch of resolutions, dozens of them, in response to the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, which included indefinite detention provisions. For example, in Albany, New York, they passed this resolution. It says, the city then recognizes that the city of Albany is not a battlefield, and its citizens and constitutionally protected persons are not currently subject to detention under the laws of war. And they expect all federal and state law enforcement officials acting within the city of Albany to work in accordance with the Constitution of the United States. So in response to passing resolutions worded almost the same like this in dozens of cities around the country, the lead organization pushing these, it was a group called People Against the National Defense Authorization Act, or People Against NDAA, PANDA. They were telling people that this actually had legal force. Resolutions are not binding. They do not hold legal force in almost every situation. They're a political statement. But they were going around telling everybody that these were legally binding when they weren't. And so giving a false expectation to the people end up resulting in people expecting the local governments to stop participating. And when they didn't, I think that led to the movement dying out on its own. Because when you went back to them and said, now we need to follow up with additional legislation, a lot of people were burned out. They're like, oh, I thought we already did this. We already created a sanctuary against indefinite detention. So, for example, here is what PANDA had to say. Now that they know this is unconstitutional, every peace officer, elected official, or other person who takes an oath to the U.S. Constitution in the city of Albany is required to interpose against those attempting to implement military detention or the law of war in Albany. And we saw that same type of thing, the same type of report in city after city after city. But when you would go to those people, they acknowledged, no, these are resolutions. These are just a statement of opinion. And so that didn't actually lead to an end to indefinite detention under the NDAA, which was just actually extended in the last couple of weeks by both the House and Senate and the current president, who extended that again for 2020. But it wasn't just the Patriot Act and indefinite detention. Back in 2013 and 2014, we had dozens and dozens and dozens of localities passing resolutions in opposition to Obama-era gun control efforts or to any violation of the Second Amendment, very similar to what we see happening in Virginia and elsewhere today. They popped up in places like Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, Utah, and elsewhere. Here, for example, in Jackson County, Michigan, they passed this resolution. They believe it's important to protect the individual's right to keep and bear arms, as stated in the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, and that any attempt to place restrictions on any lawfully possessed firearms that are illegal or that are legal and unrestricted shall be rejected. And they go on further and they say the Jackson County Board of Commissioners supports the Constitution of the United States, specifically the Second Amendment, and shall refrain from supporting any legislation that attempts to infringe on these inalienable rights. And we reported on these resolutions as they popped up. This one was from July of 2013 and pointed out that this is a good first step, basically establishing the principle that all gun control is unconstitutional, either a violation of the state or the federal constitution, but that they needed to do a follow-up. So it's important to point out there has to be a follow-up. But just passing a lot of resolutions doesn't really change things on its own. Let me try to find the next piece here. Here in Cedar City, Utah, they say specifically in their resolution passed in 2013, resolution number 213, the City Council of Cedar City in Iron County, state of Utah, they take the position that any federal act, law, order, executive order, rule, or regulation regarding firearms that are hereinafter enacted or adopted are in violation or infringement of the Second Amendment. They shall be considered invalid by Cedar City, shall not be recognized by Cedar City, are specifically rejected by Cedar City, and shall be considered null and void and of no effect in Cedar City. But again, this is a non-binding resolution, and it was essential to get a follow-up step. And we were calling on the people to do that, but they did not. And so the end result was we had dozens and dozens and dozens of these resolutions passed already that yielded no fruit. We also know that in New York, the SAFE Act, which is just a monstrosity that was passed, this has got to be, man, 6-7 years ago at this point, there were about 52 to 60 local resolutions against this, saying that they would not participate. And I know at least in the early years, the last report I saw about compliance was around 2016. I think there was about a 4% compliance with part of the New York SAFE Act. And that's very positive. I'm not sure how it's gone since then. If anyone has any official details on how it's played out since 2016, I would like to see that. But I think the bottom line on the SAFE Act, if they are still resisting this, if they are still not complying, still not registering, that it isn't the resolutions that do it. It really is a mass movement of the people refusing to participate in gun control that can have a real effect. Well, that's just the cautionary tales. Basically, if you hear about a lot of resolutions and it's the first time you've heard about it, just be aware that we've gone down this road before. And unless there's follow-up, unless there's action to not participate, to pressure your local government to not enforce those laws, to not follow them yourself or in large numbers by the grassroots, by the people themselves, the resolutions themselves will not change anything. They rarely, if ever, do. They really should just be seen as a starting point. Now, looking over in the live chat, let's see if I can have take a look at some of the questions. Here's Noah Munn, who said, are there any true sanctuary cities or counties anywhere in the country? I would think the only one, there may be about five. One that I'm aware of is in Herndon, Kansas. And they passed an ordinance, not a resolution. It's a binding law under the leadership of Mayor Kenny Chartier. I'm not sure if he's still the mayor there, but he pushed forward a law in 2013, an ordinance there that banned the city from participating or using any resources, material support or resources for the enforcement of federal gun control measures in Kansas. And that's really what you need to do. So that's a really, really good question. I also had some questions that came out in advance early. A lot of people tell me, you know, Bolden, you keep complaining about these as they're just a first step. They're just resolutions. And yes, they are just resolutions. So they tell me that we should compare them to the Declaration of Independence, which was also really just a resolution. It was a non-binding statement. But to compare the beautiful prose of the Declaration of Independence to what's being passed in these so-called Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions is just absurd. But on top of that, when the Declaration had been passed in 1776, after the Lee Resolution a few days earlier, they had already been at war for over a year. And in comparison today, every one of these so-called sanctuary counties are enforcing gun control, both from the feds and the state level. They seem to be just drawing a line in the sand on new gun control. In Virginia, for example, no one seemed to have a problem with the National Firearms Act of 1934, the Gun Control Act of 68, the Undetectable Firearms Act of 1988, the bump stock ban from 2018, or anything in between. It was only once Democrats took over and wanted to put in new gun control measures. Now, I'm not trying to poo-poo that. If that's the line in the sand that will get people to resist gun control measures, I would like to encourage that. But we do have to be realistic in our expectations of what these resolutions are really talking about. They really aren't talking about protecting the right to keep and bear arms. They just want to stop new gun control. Could that lead, if they are able to stop new gun control in Virginia, could that violates Article 1, Section 13 of the Constitution of Virginia? Could that lead to further action? Absolutely. But I think we just have to, moderate our views of what might be coming. And it's also important that the Declaration of Independence started out with natural rights as their focus. Many of these so-called Second Amendment resolutions or Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions talk about rights as granted by the Supreme Court. Here's the model resolution from the Virginia Citizens Defense League, VACDL. This is probably the most popular one. It's very similar, almost copied from resolutions passed in Illinois and various counties around Illinois in 2018. But basically, it starts out, which is positive, it starts out pointing out what the Second Amendment says. But then it follows up with whereas clause. Oh, I should pull this up on the screen for those of you who are watching. And I will put these links in the show notes over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. So then most of the whereas clauses right off the bat are talking about Supreme Court opinions. Well, you have the right to keep and bear arms. You have the natural right to keep and bear arms, whether the Supreme Court agrees with you or not. And if your foundation is to say, well, we can do this because the Supreme Court says, then I think you could end up in a bad place in the future. So I think that's a bad foundation. You didn't see anything like that in the Declaration of Independence from Jefferson and the committee. And then again, here's an example in this model resolution from VACDL. They say, whereas certain legislation that has or may be introduced in the Virginia General Assembly and certain legislation which has or may be introduced in the U.S. Congress could have the effect of infringing on the rights of law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms. I mean, it's just, and I mentioned this in another episode a couple of weeks ago, this is basically weak sauce, very milquetoast. If we're taking the Declaration as our comparison, what would Jefferson have had to say about this? Like, oh, well, the king may or have be swarming kind of the people. I mean, it just wasn't that milquetoast and maybe about it. There is no maybe. Virginia, as a state, has been violating its own constitution on the right to keep and bear arms for a long time. And Washington, D.C. has been violating the Second Amendment to the federal constitution for a long, long time as well. Going on, looking in the live chat here. Our National Guardsmen within their right of conscience to object to unlawful orders? That's a question from Shane Lackey. And I think this actually goes to the power and duty of the sheriff, which there was another question on from Kathy Tunison Scott, who asked if I could talk about the role, duty, and ultimate power of a sheriff. A lot of people want us to believe that if the sheriff says you can't come in and enforce, that the federal government is just going to follow what the sheriff has to say. And absolutely not. They don't care what the sheriff has to say. But it is anyone who takes an oath to the Constitution, anyone who takes an oath to their state constitution, it is their duty to actually follow that oath, not just to enforce everything on the books until a court tells them not to. So absolutely, everyone who's taking an oath, whether it's in the National Guard or a county sheriff, they should follow it according to their conscience. And I've got an example here that I wish I would have included for you to read along, but I have it here on my other computer with my notes here. Thomas Jefferson, he wrote in an 1804 letter to Abigail Adams about the fact that he refused to enforce portions of the Alien and Sedition Acts passed by Congress and signed by her husband when he took office in 1800 or 1801. He says, quote, "I discharged every person under punishment or prosecution under the sedition law because I considered and now consider that law to be a nullity as absolute and as palpable as if Congress had ordered us to fall down and worship a golden image." Man, he was dramatic. "And that it was as much my duty to arrest its execution in every stage as it would have been to have rescued from the fiery furnace those who should have been cast into it for refusing to worship their image." So Jefferson was saying, as president, he takes an oath to the Constitution. And if they pass something that he believes violates that oath, it's his duty. He called it his duty to do everything he could to arrest the execution of that particular law. And he discussed this a little bit further in a letter to Spencer Roan. He said, "Each department is truly independent of the others and has an equal right to decide for itself What is the meaning of the Constitution in the cases submitted to its action? There's no point in taking an oath if really what your oath is I'm going to just do whatever Congress or whatever the state government passes until a court tells me that I should do otherwise. Your oath isn't to just enforce everything. Your oath is to the Constitution, both of the state and of the federal government. Looking over on YouTube, here in Maine, Melody says, the right to bear arms shall not be questioned as a constitutional carry state. That's good, too. Looking a little bit further over on Kevin Neighbors says, your greatest threat isn't some elusive boogeyman overseas. Your greatest threat is your own government. Absolutely. Perry Woods, can the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms be overridden by a state constitution? Man, that's an entire episode. I guess it depends how you view the incorporation doctrine. The federal government, and this was another question that someone came up with as well. I'm trying to see where this one came up with. Thomas Oja also says, does the Second Amendment only restrict infringement by the federal government? Now, people who believe that the 14th Amendment incorporated the Second Amendment versus the states believe that the Second Amendment is applicable to the states, and you don't even have to pay attention to state constitutions. It's just the Second Amendment that overrides everything. This is the incorporation doctrine. On the other hand, people who are opposed to that recognize, and I think both sides actually recognize, that the founders never intended for the Bill of Rights to apply to anything beyond the federal government. And this has been, so people who oppose the incorporation doctrine, like our own Dave Benner, for example, Mike Meharry and others who've done a lot of writing on this, they both would take the position this was created by judicial fiat. And I would actually say that the results haven't been very good, because as this has kind of played out, all the gun control in Washington, D.C. that's been on the books has come since incorporation. So I could make the case that it's actually not a good choice strategically. I certainly understand where it comes from, but that's really an entire show in and of itself. I think it's a great question, and I really need to do an entire episode on that as well. Ted Wehrman says, why can't I turn you off? Because I'm following you wherever you go, Ted. As long as you stick around, we're going to keep talking. Going a little bit further, here's another question. Stephen Humes, or Artie Galbraith, says, I thought federal law trumps state law. Well, if we're talking about the Supremacy Clause, federal law trumps state law when the federal government makes that law in pursuance of the Constitution, in pursuance of the delegated powers of the Constitution. So that's important. Ralph Thomas from Wakulla County Board of Commissioners. I appreciate your engagement with us in the comments the other day. Thank you so much. He asked this, symbolic or not, do you find no value in the fact that local governments are pushing back and starting to stand together against overreaching states and federal government? Well, that's the question in and of itself. The way it's framed suggests that the local governments are pushing back. And so far, when it comes to Second Amendment sanctuaries, none of them are actually pushing back. Time will tell if they do. If they do, that certainly is a positive thing. If it's really just political posturing because the Democrats took over in Virginia, then I don't think that's going to lead very far. And then on top of it, what is good and what isn't really depends on what's being passed. And so far, a lot of the resolutions that I've seen have not been very good. So talking about the Supreme Court as basically like a grantor of permission to exercise our rights is a little problematic, but I think that can be corrected. Certainly in the long run, it's going to take a lot of pressure from the people where these resolutions have passed to say, hey, county sheriff, I heard you talking tough about not enforcing. Why are you still enforcing the National Firearms Act of 1934? Why are you still participating in the enforcement of 1968? And on and on. Why are you enforcing current gun control laws on the books now? It's going to take a lot of pressure, but I wouldn't necessarily say the non-binding resolutions can be very important. But I think the examples that I gave to start point out that even when this happens in large numbers, it's very unlikely that the resolutions in and of themselves, without a lot of follow-up action, will actually do something. So I think it could be good. I think it's also important to point out that no one is actually pushing back so far. They're talking about it, and we'll see what happens from there. Stephen Humes asks, does that mean that only state officials have the legal authority to declare his or her city a sanctuary city? I think what's more important is beyond just declaring. So far, the resolutions being passed are merely making declarations. They aren't actually ordering anyone to stand down. Now, should Virginia pass all these new gun control measures, and should they do it in a way where they're coming after people rather than being really smart about grandfather? When I say smart, I mean it in an evil way. I've already seen reports where they're talking about using grandfather clauses, and I think that will reduce a lot of the opposition. We see what happens with NFA firearms. You can't get new ones, but you can get antiques, and you're talking $20,000, $30,000 from at least what I've heard. So it's actually been priced out of the general public's capability to get them. It's really just for collectors. And I think in the long run, the Virginia government, the gun grabbers that are actually in control now, that's really what they have their eye on. They may not be able to stop the people today. They may not get people to turn their guns in or register them today. But in the long run, these generations die off, and they need to resist this, whether they come knocking door to door or not. I'm not sure if that actually really well answers that question. Brian and Dare says, this new law needs to be taken to the courts. It's a violation of the Virginia State Constitution as well as the U.S. State Constitution. We also have a remedy, jury nullification. And first of all, a lot of people think there's a new law that's already been passed. I think it's very likely that they will pass something because they control the entire government there in Virginia. But if we're only focusing on what's happening in Virginia, and we're talking here in California or Texas or in Idaho about what's happening in Virginia, just waiting for Virginia to do something, waiting for the federal courts to come in and save them, I think we're all going to be very sorry. There's no law that's been passed yet. It's good that the counties are telling the state government that they're opposed to this. We'll see how it plays out. Back over to YouTube. This is new. This is new to me, so I apologize. Locke Haney says, what about the Fourth Circuit ruling that assault weapons bans do not violate the Second Amendment? I was reading a little bit about this yesterday as I was looking through some of these notes and trying to take naps to kind of deal with this head cold that I have, or chest cold. And I believe, is that, Locke, is that in relationship to the New York Safe Act, or was that a previous one that I'm thinking about as well? But either way, I don't think the federal courts can be trusted to protect us, because no one's taken down 1934. Jim Knowlton here says the idea of county-level nullification of NFA 34 is perhaps the most exciting thing I've ever pondered. It's not going to be easy. It's going to take a lot of work. But certainly, if we're really talking about the natural right to keep and bear arms, the founders' vision for the Second Amendment, then certainly we can't just ignore the other laws that are on the books either. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to poo-poo efforts that draw a new line in the sand, but let's think big picture here as well. Locke Haney says, this was a ruling in a Virginia case. I am not necessarily familiar with that. If you don't mind posting a link to that or emailing it to me at team@10thamendmentcenter.com, again, team@10thamendmentcenter.com. I'd like to take a look at it. And Funky Euphemism makes a point that I really should be making more myself. Circuit courts haven't been upholding Heller as laid down and McDonald. Both are being contravened. And I agree. I don't think once it gets into the court system and then one court says, well, we can define this right in a reasonable manner, over time, eventually, they're going to define that right to non-existence. We've already seen this with NFA weapons already. They almost don't exist. It's not going to be much longer before those are gone. And then people really don't seem to have a problem with that in many situations. Of course, all the good ones do. But in the long run, every single time you allow them to chip away, and decade after decade they chip away, eventually you wonder why they're coming after everything at every level. Well, you shouldn't be surprised. Looking over on Facebook, Tim Ropchak says, this governor isn't going to stop because of a law. Absolutely. And in fact, almost no one seems to stop because of a law. The federal government hasn't stopped because of the Second Amendment. We still have federal gun control measures on the books since the 1930s. They haven't stopped because anyone's waving the Second Amendment at them. They're not stopping because of lawsuits. The only way they'll stop is what James Madison advised in Federalist 46, and part of his advice, step by step, was a refusal to cooperate with officers of the Union. Mark Sellerman says, the National Guard takes an oath to uphold the Constitution and to obey the orders of the president and their commanders. So which phrase would they adhere to? Well, the oath is really to be the Constitution. So I think it makes it very difficult, but certainly we want to encourage them. I think CSPOA.org, Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, is a good place to get them started. Dennis Marburger points out, Michigan's Constitution, Section 6, every person has a right to keep and bear arms for the defense of himself and the state. And of course, we are allowing the courts to define what that means. We're allowing the courts to tell us, oh, okay, well, we might need a permit, or certain people don't qualify, or if it has too many rounds, or like in New York, they said you could have a 10 capacity mag, but you could only have 7 in it. And that ended up being struck down by a court. But like, as long as you keep doing this, they're going to come up with more and more ways to attack your natural rights. And we should just recognize that all of them are a violation of liberty. Eric Ellie says, what are your thoughts on the federal government shutting down Lysander Spooner's American Letter Mail Company? Awful. I mean, that would be a cool episode. I've talked about Spooner when it comes to trial by jury a few months ago, but that would be a really good episode as well. Dennis Marburger says, did you mention some model legislation or verbiage to use at the state, county, and local levels? And this is a really good question. And I believe this was also asked by Ralph Thomas, who was the County Board of Commissioners guy who's been asking us questions in Wakulla County, or if I'm pronouncing that wrong, I'm sure, in Florida. He said, hey, well, you guys keep telling us that these resolutions are bad. Have you actually provided model resolutions for people to use? And no, this is a problem. This is a mistake on our part. What we've done was we spent a lot of time. We have model ordinances that have legal binding effect. But if people want to pass a non-binding resolution, we have not offered that as a recommendation. But that's going to change. Instead, what we've done was we spent a lot of time basically trying to teach people the difference between resolutions and ordinances, encourage people to actually improve the language being used. But we're going to turn that around very soon. So thank you, Ralph, and thank you, Dennis, for asking those questions. Sean Simpson says, effective or not, a statement has been made. See how words shape reality and start more than speech throughout history. It all starts with a statement. It has been made, just the first move in an endgame. And yes, statements. John Dickinson, in response to the Townsend Acts of 1767, and primarily the first of those, the New York Restraining Act, he wrote a series of 12 letters from a farmer in Pennsylvania. And he said, just to start things out, all of the colonies should join with New York. He was primarily talking about Pennsylvania. He said, we should pass a non-binding resolution supporting the people of New York when they violate her rights. Because, and as he put it, concordia res parve crescunt. It's a Latin phrase that means small things grow great by concord. And yes, a statement that has follow-up to it does lead to greater things. But a statement that is only... when I read most of the efforts, most of the resolutions being passed, it honestly sounds to me like the goal of the organizations behind them and the politicians is to create a conflict that's going to go to federal court. And then the federal court, in my expectation, is going to kind of half-ass do something kind of positive that people will cheer about, and it'll be less bad than it might be. That's, I think, the most positive outcome. But we'll see. I think better than that would be local governments refusing to participate en masse to the point that they can't stop it, and people en masse refusing to participate, having low compliance rate, like 4% that it was at least at some point in response to the New York SAFE Act. Looking back in the live chat again, MA says the plan is attrition via generational indoctrination through our liberal universities. And not just that, but I think it's like a boiling the frog thing. You put the frog in the water and you keep heating it up. We all know that parable, that story, but that's basically what's been happening. No, none of us were around for the debates of the National Firearms Act that the NRA was so influential in getting passed. And so then once we're born, that's the starting point. We also heard the same type of thing during the Tea Party heyday. It was taxed enough already, TEA, rather than all these taxes. It's like the line in the sand has to be more than just don't make it worse. It can be a good starting point, but if that's the entire motivation, I don't think it will yield a lot of good results. Patricia Dance says, I live in New York State. I'm not seeing much resistance. Lots of people have just moved away. And that I hear my buddy Robert Scott Bell, who does a health freedom show from noon to 2 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. He always says, man, get the hell out of California. I know a lot of my gun rights friends have told me this. My buddies up, Stuart Rhodes, for example, from Oath Keepers said, man, we are worried about you down there in LA. And certainly, I think in all places, we're in a very dangerous place, especially like when Patrick Henry advised us, don't rely on the rulers to be good people because you're always going to have a loss of liberty. I would love to see some statistics on what's going on in New York in more detail, because the original ones were actually seemed very, very positive. Jay Armstrong says the feds used to defend citizens' right to keep and bear arms against rogue states. Also, federal gun control constitutionally should be limited to their U.S. districts for, I don't think, my view of the Constitution, and I had a debate with somebody, an NRA supporter on Twitter this morning, not really a debate. I was just saying, hey, this is how I see it. The ATF shouldn't exist. The Constitution doesn't authorize it. It should be a convenience store. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. That's the old libertarian joke. And all federal gun control, all of it, is unconstitutional, and none of it should exist. And we're going, I keep saying 1934, 68, 86, 88, and 2018. There are probably others that I'm leaving off that list throughout as well. Basically, my view is that all federal gun control is a violation of the federal constitution, and I would say almost in almost every state. California and Illinois are really problematic with their state constitutions, but Virginia's state constitution, for example, is really strong on the natural right to keep and bear arms, and we can thank good people like George Mason, Thomas Jefferson, and others who got on board with that as well. I'm also hearing a lot of people saying we need a civil war. Absolutely not. This is exactly what supporters of the monster state want, is talk of violence. They've got way more firepower, and they want people to act stupid so they can come cracking down and scare people. Absolutely not. Do not say that kind of stuff. That is not what we're talking about here. And in fact, Jefferson, Madison, Wilson, Carey, Nicholas, many others who supported the nullification resolutions, non-binding resolutions of 1798 against the Alien and Sedition Acts, they wanted to take a moderate middle ground between total submission and all-out civil war. And that is resistance, refusal to cooperate. Until that is played out, no one should be talking about civil war. I'm not on board with that, Robert. Sorry. Or anybody else who says that as well. Bob Brewer says, it's always good to see you, Bob. I didn't know you were over on Facebook too, but that's pretty awesome. Why are we ignoring we hold these truths? All men are created equal. Isn't this the touchstone for violations of the Constitution? Well, I think if we just look at our rights as natural rights, that changes the view. If we're looking at it as, well, the Supreme Court, if we're looking at this model resolution from Virginia Citizens Defense League, they're saying their foundation is primarily, here's the Second Amendment, and here's what the Supreme Court has said in Columbia versus District of Columbia versus Heller, McDonald versus Chicago, United States versus Miller. So over and over and over, I wonder if that's the case that someone was talking about as well, U.S. versus Miller. Basically, if we're starting with, well, the Supreme Court says we can do this, well, what happens when the Supreme Court changes its mind? The great Kevin Gutzman, the great historian and constitutional expert that I've learned so much from over the years, he often said a phrase that I love and I've kind of incorporated into my own talking points is, a lot of people are viewing the Constitution as meaning what the Supreme Court says it means until it changes its mind. And that's not what the founders had to say about that as well. Before Second says 100% agree with the Civil War talk. Terrible idea, dangerous and counterproductive. I think a lot of people want to push us in that direction. And I think there was a comment that someone left earlier before I started the broadcast that basically says this. David Sykes, this is great. The left is trying to provoke a violent response from the public. It is part of their propaganda strategy. If anyone starts a fight, they can say, see, we told you so. They need to be voted out ASAP. Well, the people who are trying. Well, it's not just the people in office that are trying to provoke that, but I think a lot of people really, really like having people fight with each other, because then what happens is the central government and its basic And it shouldn't be like this, but basically the state and local governments are acting like federal counties rather than independent sovereign states these days. And for a long time, they want this to happen so they can have a further and greater crackdown. That's my conspiracy side. I don't put it past government to do stuff like that. James Madison at one point says, he said, and he was a conspiracy guy too, I guess, because he said, you know, it is a universal truth that the loss of liberty at home will be basically come from fear, dangers, real or pretended, in Madison's words. He said, quote, real or pretended from abroad. He basically said government would, if there was a real danger, government would use that danger to frighten the people to expand their own power. And if there wasn't a real danger, they would make them up. And I guess I'm just on the side of James Madison once again. Once again. And Dan Leonard basically says it is divide and conquer. Bob Brewer asks if anyone saw Joel Skousen's year in review. No, feel free to post a link to that if you feel that it's something worthy sharing, Bob. I appreciate you mentioning that. I always appreciate your feedback as well. Alexander Helling says, hello, Mike. Love your commentary. So glad I'm finally able to get a live stream. Awesome. I'm sorry I'm a little bit sick and my voice is pretty crackly, but I appreciate the kind words and you being here as well. Matt says, talk of civil unrest may be uncomfortable, but it is a path we are walking. Certainly, there is a lot of civil unrest, and I think we're talking about a government that has been using violence on all of us for a long time. But I don't think it's a good strategy and a smart choice at any point. MA says, where is the NRA? Have they made a public stance on Virginia? I saw one small post on NRA ILA that seemed relatively positive, but not in any detail. Gun Owners of America have been really out in front on this. Other publications, Bearing Arms, .com, for example, has been talking about this. I know on that podcast and a YouTube show, they're talking about it quite a bit. I don't necessarily agree with their analysis of it. I am hopeful that something can play out well on this. My expectations, I may be a cynic just because I've seen this happen so many times. I'm a total cynic on this. I don't trust government officials. I don't trust political statements, and I don't expect politicians to do what they're supposed to when it comes to liberty. So I am very cynical about the potential results, but I'm actually hoping that mentioning that will rile some people up rather than just complaining that I'm not on Team Trump or Team NRA or Team Resolution or whatever, to actually do something to follow up once these new laws pass. And then beyond that, to actually do something about the laws that have been on the books for so long already. That is so much more important. Fuck you, euphemism, says NRA haven't figured out how to make money off this yet. Alexander Helling says, I check on a lot of gun channels and they are falling for all this rhetoric that, all right, we got sanctuary counties in over 90% of Virginia. And I think that with a lot of the general public, people are being tricked. Whether it's intentional or not, I can't say. I don't understand the motivation. I have talked to some people behind the scenes who are very prominent in this effort. And I've had email communication with them and pointed out and reminded them that these resolutions have no legal effect. Resolutions are not legally binding. They give no one a direction to start or stop doing anything. They agree. And then when they talk in public, they keep pushing the same message. We have sanctuary counties in Virginia. We have sanctuary counties in Florida. We have sanctuary counties in Texas. Well, if the immigration sanctuary cities, the three, four, 500 of them, most prominently San Francisco, if they were just passing non-binding resolutions talking about how they didn't like federal immigration laws, no one would be complaining about them because they wouldn't be stopping the enforcement of anything. The reason that they complain about these immigration sanctuaries is because they are passing, whether you agree with them, whether you agree they're even allowed to do this, they are doing it anyway. They are passing binding ordinances that ban the enforcement or that participate in the enforcement of federal immigration laws, sometimes in a broad range like in San Francisco, sometimes very narrow in places like Iowa and elsewhere. But that's why they complain, because they are literally stopping the enforcement. They aren't talking about it. We need to go beyond talk and into the next step. And I know a lot of people keep telling me, you know, talk is the first point. And yes, talk is the first point. But if we're telling people that these resolutions are something that they're not, it's going to be very difficult to get the grassroots behind them when we say, okay, now we need to do the next step. So that's a really, really important part. Essential Freedom says, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Jim Knowlton says, people 50 and younger are much less likely to blindly support the NRA. They come across as duck hunters who just want to keep their break action shotguns and don't care anything about anything else. I think NFA is a big deal. They are totally not opposed to National Firearms Act at all. Jake Weishart said, or Wishart, I apologize if I'm saying that as well. We have a lot of enemies on our soil that would love to see us divide and fight each other. Nullify, I'm just, there's a lot of talk in there. Nullify all unconstitutional acts, arrest traitors, and let justice be served. Essential Freedom over on Facebook as well. Well, I guess I could probably try to wrap that up. I'll take a look at and see if there's a few more questions here. But I wanted to point out a couple of other episodes that I've done on this, and I will link these in the show notes. Back in October, I did a full episode about sanctuary counties on the right to keep and bear arms, or sanctuary cities. And it's called Not All Sanctuaries Are Cut from the Same Cloth. That's one episode that I think is a good idea to check out. Another one, and I will link these in the show notes at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. Another one that I did in mid-December on the 18th, Virginia Second Amendment Sanctuaries, Rhetoric versus Reality, talking specifically about the sanctuaries being passed in Virginia, what you can rely on them for, what you shouldn't. Then I did a follow-up episode to that just a couple days later, Top 5 Reasons to Not Trust Sheriffs, Virginia Second Amendment Sanctuary Edition. I go through a lot of the statements that these sheriffs are making. And we find out when you dig into it, even the guy who is talking about deputizing thousands of people, he only wants to deputize thousands of them in response to any new gun control efforts. And then in the same, like, he doesn't even miss a beat. He's like, we've got a lot of laws on the books already. We just need to enforce those. We don't need new ones. He's okay with everything that violates your right to keep and bear arms already on the books. That's really the NRA line on all of this stuff. Full enforcement of the laws on the books, those are okay. But if you let them have a foot in the door, they're going to turn a foot in the door to a 1,000-mile chasm in no time. And that's where we're at right now. So don't trust the sheriffs. I have a warning in there from Patrick Henry as well that I think is really good. And then just before Christmas, I did this episode on resolutions, talking about how they are a good starting point. And we know they are from Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and John Dickinson, who was called the penman of the revolution. So looking back in the live chat just to see if there's anything else here. Oh, Jim Knowlton has a good question. How do we convert this energy into moving the red line backwards to reclaim our rights we've already lost? That is my great concern, Jim. My great concern is when you get a lot of people finally on board with taking action on a local level. We've been calling for people to do this in large numbers on the local level since about 2009. We started to see some resolutions passing in 2013. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, they didn't go anywhere because after a few dozen of them passed, no one did any follow-up. And now we're finally starting to see really, I think, potentially very large numbers. I wouldn't be surprised to see across the country 300, 400, 500 of these, more than we saw against the Patriot Act. But if people are being told that they're making sanctuaries, they're given false expectations. We really need to be very clear that the people are going to have to do a lot more, that this is a starting point. We're just registering our opposition to what either the state or the federal government is doing, and that we will follow up. You can actually include that in the resolution. We know that back in 2007, 8, 9, and 10, there were a lot of states that were passing 10th Amendment sovereignty resolutions. And the language that was used in those, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Florida, elsewhere, not all of them passed, but the language that was being used basically said to the federal government, you need to cease and desist, and this was exact language, cease and desist, effective immediately, any and all acts beyond the scope of delegated powers in the Constitution. And if you don't, we will take follow-up steps. So that's very, very important. I think that could make for a very good resolution. You basically say you start out with the natural right to keep and bear arms as your foundation. You talk about the Second Amendment to the federal constitution. You can talk about the state constitution depending on how you're approaching things. And then you say, look, we oppose all violations of the natural right to keep and bear arms. We declare our intent, like they're already saying, to not participate in that, even though they've been going on for a long time. And then should there be any action, this is our notice to you that we are going to follow up. And I think that's probably a good approach. And that's in my mindset as I work with my team here on creating a real positive resolution that can be introduced and passed on a local level. Let me actually pull up here the model ordinance here. We have a 10thamendmentcenter.com/legislation. You can click through and see a lot of different legislation that we have. The Second Amendment Preservation Act. This is a model piece of legislation. We already see versions of this introduced at the state level in Missouri and in Oklahoma. We expect it to be in a number of other states as well to consider basically ban the enforcement of all federal gun control, past, present, or future, to create a gun rights sanctuary state. So we expect to see that considered. And I think there's going to be a lot of support for it, primarily in Missouri. Essential Freedom, a lot of pressure on you to rally the troops there in Missouri and everybody else. I know there's a bunch of people from Missouri that we see pop up. Ron Calzone at MissouriFirst.org is another great guy to work with there. But then there's also the model local gun rights sanctuary legislation that can be introduced on a city level to deal with federal gun control. So we are going to start working on some non-binding resolutions that can be used to deal with the states and the federal government as well in the very near future. Anyways, Jim Knowlton asks, how should we try to get rid of pistol registration system in Michigan? I don't know, actually. I would love to actually know more about that. Will you email me, jimteam@10thamendmentcenter.com? That gives me any citation to look at. And if I've got some ideas on how to deal with it, I will send it your way. I think it's going to start with non-binding resolutions on a county level. That's important. And then what to do next, I guess it depends on what the language of the legislation or the law on the books says. And Jim says, Godzilla Megatron keeps asking about taking arms against the government. Nah, I'm not on board with that at all. Like, I don't know how many times we can say that, but no one should be talking like that at all. That is not a good approach. And I think there are probably some people who genuinely think that's our only way out, but it certainly isn't if we follow the founders. And then there are other people who are probably paid actors of the deep state who want to rile people up to do that. When I was part of the anti-war movement, I mean, I still am today, but when I was out doing activism with the far left during the Bush days, almost every time we had an organizational meeting, someone would show up that no one recognized out of nowhere and immediately start talking about all this, tell us that all this talk was pointless. We really should get out in the streets and start smashing windows. We should go shoot somebody up. We were always told that that type of thing should happen. And my belief was that these were probably FBI plants. But I'm not on board with that if you believe it genuinely or not. And just doing one last... Lane Ragsdale says voting in California is impossible to stop the left, or is it? Well, I live in California as well, and there's no one I've been able to vote for in my life. I mean, I've only been here in my adult life, so in my entire voting life since the mid-90s, I've never voted for anyone in California. I've never found anyone worth my while. I've also never found anyone on the national level either, so... I have been a lifelong non-voter because I will only, like John Quincy Adams said, always vote for principle, even if you vote alone, and cherish the notion or the idea that your principle or your vote is never lost. So I hold to that. I will vote for someone at some point if there's somebody really good. I've tried one time in the past, but the secretary here in California threw my vote out. Terry Craver says, we have a meeting with our West Virginia state senator about this tonight. We are pushing for a state law to ban all federal gun laws. Awesome. If you want to ask questions about this, please email us, team@10thamendmentcenter.com. Again, team@10thamendmentcenter.com. We absolutely do have legislation for this. Let me see if I can post it in the live chat while we are on here. Bear with me a moment. I know for those of you guys who are listening on the podcast edition, this might get boring, but hopefully it's somewhat interesting still. So I'm just going to go over to this live chat. Terry Craver, I'm hitting reply, and here's a link for you. That's a PDF that you can right-click and download, and that's a good example. You'll also want to see if you can, maybe Essential Freedom can post a link to the Missouri legislation. You could also send, hey, this is the Missouri legislation that we're looking at. We'd like to see you introduce something similar as well. That's a great question. Jake Wishart says, any news? Am I saying your name wrong? I'm sorry about that if I'm not. Where is that question? Any news on Arkansas? I know ASA has ASA. Oh, that's the governor has declared Arkansas to be a sanctuary state for refugees. I don't know. I know they decriminalized suppressors last year. It was SB 400. I think it was Bob Ballard was the state legislator or senator who introduced that legislation. But I haven't actually heard anyone in Arkansas pushing for this. It would be key for you to take the legislation that we've included here. You should be able to see it in the live chat and send it over to your state rep and state senator to take on federal gun control on the state level. Kirk Adams says, can the Virginia governor and legislators be arrested for a conspiracy against rights, Title 18, U.S. Code, Section 241 and 242? I don't know. I've never actually read that. And I think this kind of gets into the question of whether the federal government will come in and save us. The federal government is the worst violator of liberty in the history of our existence. Like, it violates our every part of the Constitution all the time. Maybe the Third Amendment, they're not, but I know some people will make some arguments on that as well. But they don't follow the Fourth Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the First Amendment. They don't follow the Commerce Clause, the General Welfare Clause. I don't want to rely on the largest government in the history of the world, the largest empire the globe has ever seen, to protect my liberty from some nasty state government. I think that is a very dangerous approach. Every time you give them power to do something that you may like, eventually they're going to have the power. Someone else is going to come along and use that power in ways that you don't want them to. Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to Joseph C. Cabell, I think it was like 1818 or 1820, he basically told Joseph, he's like, what has destroyed liberty in every free government on history? And that is concentration of power, centralization of power. So even if we want them to do something that's positive, I think in the long run, the more power they have to protect us, the more power the bad guys are going to come in and use that power against us. And I don't actually trust any of those people in Washington, D.C. ever. Okay, and Essential Freedom posted a link to Senate Bill 588 in Missouri. If you can also post the House bill, I forget the number. It might be 1637 off the top of my head. Lane Ragsdale said, I voted, but alas, never win. No kidding. Here in California, and some people will tell me, oh, what the hell do you know, Bolden? How can you talk about this? You live in California. As if living in California is not the best education for how government should never be trusted. Like, the fact that I live in California and live under this state government and the federal government violating people's rights, I know more than most people who are still living in other states that still trust their governments to do the right thing. As California goes, so goes the nation. I know you don't want to hear that, but that's kind of how it plays out. And I happen to be a living example of someone who learns firsthand over and over how bad it is. So it's just experience, I guess, all perspective. Lane also says no federal government saving states. Yeah, it's like basically going to the mafia to protect you against somebody else. I mean, people probably felt safe sometimes when Al Capone came by, but if you weren't able to pay, cough up, Al Capone would show up there with armed thugs. It's just what the federal government does as well. Anyways, one quick look over at YouTube and see, Jim says it's a state law from 1927. Okay, it looks like I'm done. Sherry Voluntary Show. Awesome. Good to see Sherry. I was on her show just before Christmas, and she's an awesome human being as well. So you will never vote yourself free. That's like trying to spend yourself wealthy. That's a good way of putting it. Anyways, so you guys, I'm going to put all the links to the show in the show notes over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/path to liberty. The other episodes that I referenced, plus the model legislation, these articles about the Patriot Act, NDAA, the older Second Amendment resolutions, which led to nothing as well. And hopefully this provides you a lot of good information. I'll go look in the chat because I think my voice is almost done here. I'm going to look in the chat and see if there's some questions I can answer. And then, of course, feel free to email me, team@10thAmendmentCenter.com. I hope you guys have an awesome, happy, and safe New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And I'll be back probably on Friday. If not, it'll be next week, Monday, here for more episodes and 2020 sessions of the path to liberty. Thanks so much. Peace. Love having you guys around, and have a great day.